There is nothing wrong with your generic MP3 player. Do not attempt to adjust the sound. We are now controlling the transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We control the horizontal. We control the vertical. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your generic MP3 player. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the British Bodcast. Welcome to a new show from one of us. We are the British Bodcast. I'd like to introduce myself. I'm the Duke of Havoc. I run another podcast called Three Bods, One Pod. And one of us have been very kind to let us come and put a show out on this network. I'd like to introduce my two colleagues. First off, we have the lovely Hazel Robinson, a.k.a. Pirate Moggy. Hello, Hazel.
Hello.
Would you like to say hello to our lovely American friends?
Hello, American friends.
They're going to like you. And also...
Sorry, her voice just kind of got for me. I think I need a moment.
And that perverted man is the lovely Dan Hart, a.k.a. Dapper Dan Hart.
Hello, lovely listeners.
So we are a podcast that covers geek news and shenanigans and whatnot, very similar to some of the other shows which go out on One of Us. But... we're hoping to give you a bit more of a British feel. We know a lot of you are Anglophiles. I think the rise in popularity of the likes of Who, Americans be going cray cray for Who at the moment.
Please don't say that ever again.
I'm trying to relate. I want to relate to our American friends. So I've got a cup of tea and some English muffins, so we're all good. And some ferrets down my trousers. So. And I'm wearing a flat cap.
Boy, that escalated quickly.
It did. And it's only 10 o'clock in the morning. So we're hoping to bring you a unique spin on the biggest news from the world of geek, from comics, film, TV and whatnot. And I think the biggest thing I've seen this week is Iron Man joined Twitter. And
yes,
Twitter blew up.
Didn't it just?
I think he's tweeted like 10 times and he has 1.6 million followers.
However, the highlight of his Twitter this week is the fact that his science bro, Mark Ruffalo, has been tweeting at him, which I think has made a million Tumblr fanfics explode in a singularity.
Has Robert Downey Jr. replied?
Yeah, he's been calling him Banner and everything.
Oh,
so good.
It's up there with when, I think it was Greg Clark revealed at one of the Comic-Cons that they were all in town together when they were filming The Avengers, and Chris Evans just sent a tweet out saying, "Assemble." And it's just like... fanboys and girls everywhere just splooshed. It was,
Oh, that was when they went clubbing and freaked out some poor guy.
Oh, really?
Because he just, like, looked around and there were all of the Avengers.
That would probably be...
bad dancing.
Did you see, on an Avengers note, did you see what Mark Ruffalo tweeted, I think, yesterday or Thursday?
No.
He said, probably going to get in trouble for this. And it was a photo of... the folding director's chairs they all have when they're on set with their names on.
Oh, yeah.
But he showed Scarlett Johansson's one, meaning that she is currently, I believe, in the UK filming Avengers 2, which will be interesting.
Sorry. We're recording a podcast and Scarlett Johansson is less than 50 miles away from me.
If it makes you feel better, she's only about 10 miles away from me.
My spider sense is tingling.
That's not a spider sense.
Oh, ScarJo. Have you seen her new film yet? I keep hearing weird things about it.
I really want to, but no one wants to go and see it with me because they'll say it's too weird.
I've heard, because it's almost like a spy on the wall type of film. I think that, and there's rumours going around that, I don't know, do you know the plot of it, Hazel, or not?
Yeah, I've read the book.
Oh, is it based on a book? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is.
There's me
is
showing.
Is it like Species by way of Ken Loach?
Well, it's Scarlett Johansson is a sort of traumatized, sexy alien who eats men.
So, but is she just taking on the form of a sexy human, or is she actually, is that what her natural form is?
Well, that's kind of what the whole thing's about. It's a body horror sort of thing.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
But it's very kind of... I'm not sure that Fly on the Wall is quite right about it. It's very stylized and kind of almost dreamy and psychedelic, in between just being super grim shots of Glasgow.
Well, because I heard a clip of it on another podcast, and it sounded very real, as if... It didn't sound like it was scripted. Like, I think she was pulling up. She pulled up in a car alongside a guy and was like, "Oh, where are you going? I can give you a lift." And obviously, if an attractive woman's offering a guy a lift, 99% of the time he's going to accept. But it felt very real. It didn't feel acted. And there are rumours.
Yeah, it's very, very realistic. But then there's these dream sequences.
There was, as I was about to say, there was a lot of stuff in the press about how when they were filming that, they had... Scarlett Johansson driving round Glasgow in the car, pulling up next to people, and they were filming her talking to guys and their reactions, and they didn't know at the time that it was for a movie. I'm assuming afterwards, if they were going to be used in the film, they had signed release forms, but they wanted to get a normal person's reaction to car pulls up, one of the most beautiful women on the planet leans it out and says, "How about a bit of it?" And they wanted to see how people coped with that and their reactions, which... You know, interesting way of making it, but that I think it's very much very cinema verite. Is that the right term for it? They've gone for a very, I hate the term gritty. They've gone for a very realistic. This is how it would be in real life, rather than saying Species, where Syl picks up everyone in hotel bars and proceeds to have noisy hotel sex with them.
Mm.
They've gone for this, like the other route with this.
Yeah, but talk about a bizarre film. But anyway, yeah, I mean, obviously going back to. We're already off on a tangent with regards to obviously, you know, Scarlett Johansson and the Avengers being filmed. It's mental that's all being filmed over in the UK, and whether the UK is doubling up for America like it did in Captain America, where I think Manchester doubled up for Brooklyn in the early scenes of that. I don't know whether
yes,
really,
yeah, yes, yeah. The scenes where he's being where he gets super soldiered. And then he chases down the Hydra agent and everything. That's Manchester. That's how grim Manchester is. It looks like 1940s Brooklyn.
I would just like to say to my friend Jen, who lives on the street where they filmed Captain America, and watched him running down the street with big rubber feet over his shoes, because he was barefoot in the scene, whilst he was chasing Thorin Oakenshield. I'd like to apologise for my colleagues saying that where you live is a slum. They don't mean it. They've never been.
I've been. Manchester's all right. It's just full of Manchester people. Mancunians.
But, I mean, as people who live in South London, or well, me and Dan do, we do know that that's being used as the apocalyptic wasteland post-Ultron.
Yes. It really is. London's famously used for a lot of films when they need to take it to like very odd locations. Kubrick shot Full Metal Jacket in Docklands.
Yes.
Just prior to when it was having all its urban renewal and things like the Canary Wharf Tower was going up, all the sequences in Full Metal Jacket where they're going through what looks like the ruined city.
Yeah, that's when he gets taken out by the sniper, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a very flexible shooting location, and there's great tax breaks if you want to film here.
Yeah. So,
I'm just plugging away my city.
Well, you know, any Hollywood producers that happen to listen to this podcast, and, you know, obviously hit us up. We're sure we can put you in touch with someone and you can go film in and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, also talking about, obviously, with Downey Jr. now being on Twitter and Tumblr now probably collapsing, on, you know, it has enough with Super Hulock and God knows what else. Twitter kind of pisses me off a bit at the moment with spoilers.
As in people giving them or people complaining about them?
Well, a little bit about the latter, but more the former of... There doesn't seem to be a lot of consideration when massive shows, obviously, they can't simulcast because we're normally asleep when shows are going out in the US... But some people decide to just come online that evening or the next morning and just fill their Twitter feed with massive spoilers for shows like, oh, I don't know, the Game of Thrones.
I think specifically you were drawing attention to this week's episode
and
the big events that took place.
Yeah, and that was spoiled for me by Twitter. So the point, I unfollowed about 10 people because they decided to do that. I don't know whether this should be like an etiquette of, can we not have like 24 hours?
I think there's an element here of Game of Thrones is a very tricky one. Because unlike, say, if we were talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which purely exists as a TV show, with Game of Thrones, you're talking about an adaptation of books that have been out for a very long time. Okay, case in point, this week's episode of Game of Thrones, the book that featured these events is 13 years old. Now, if I'm on Twitter and I'm talking about a book that's 13 years old, I think it's legitimate to discuss what's going on. However, I think people need to be aware that there are people out there, a lot of whom either haven't read or aren't going to read the books and are just watching the TV show. And you need to be aware that you can talk about the book, maybe not when it's relevant to what's going on the show.
Yeah, I struggle. Hazel, have you read the books or do you watch the show at all?
I've read the books years and years ago.
Okay.
And I've seen bits of the show. But I had my life ruined by the Wheel of Time. I don't really have any space for another awful long fantasy series.
Book 42 of the Wheel of Time.
See, that is my fear. Like, nothing chills me more than the idea of a book 14 or whatever they're onto. I'm from the Tumblr. And the etiquette is that you should tag anything that's spoilery. So if anyone's being, I was going to say precious about it, but actually I'm really precious about spoilers most of the time.
Rosebud was the
sledge. You can mute particular tags. And you can mute on Twitter as well.
Can you?
So I think if people are tagging it, it's kind of legitimate. But I did get in massive trouble for spoiling The Winter Soldier.
How?
Because I forgot that if people follow you and another person, they can see your added conversations.
Yes.
And me and another British person accidentally spoiled a bunch of that for a load of Americans.
But in particular, would that be the big reveal towards the end, or are we talking more about the Winter Soldier himself? Because Marvel have made no two ways. I mean, they've just been out there, because a lot of people weren't aware.
Yeah, because it was billed as Bucky Barnes / the Winter Soldier.
But a lot of people weren't aware of that, and I think that would have been quite a nice reveal. I think we've spoken about this before, but that would have been quite a nice reveal.
Yeah, sorry anyone who hasn't seen it.
Oh, fuck, it's been out for 2 weeks now. I think that's fair enough.
If you're listening to this and you haven't seen Captain America the Winter Soldier, go and watch Captain America the Winter Soldier. We'll still be here when you come back.
Yeah, I mean, the guys at One of Us, they've reviewed the film. They've spoke about it on their Geek podcast as well and broke it down. So anyone who's listened to this on One of Us has most likely seen it.
Fair enough.
But, yeah, I just think there needs to be a bit of etiquette in terms of... Don't even make passive-aggressive spoilers. Just say, wow, what an episode. That's all I need. I mean, I know someone's going to die because someone dies every fucking week, but...
Something I thought was quite right, an incident I had recently is, for the longest time, I was used to, America got their comics a day before the UK.
Yes.
So I would have to avoid message boards for fear of getting accidental spoilers. For the longest time, America used to get all of their movies significantly ahead of us.
Yeah.
The gap seems to be getting shorter and shorter. And in fact, I think Cap 2, I think, is the fifth Marvel film that we got earlier.
Yeah, we get it about a week earlier, don't we?
Yeah.
Now, I actually had a conversation on Twitter with someone, and it was about the most recent series of Sherlock and the third episode. And I'd been discussing it on a Monday morning with one of my UK friends. And this American chap, not in an aggressive way, was saying, "Oh, come on, guys, spoilers, I haven't seen it yet." And I said, "Well, in all fairness, most of the American fans that I converse with, stuff leaks out ahead of time. It's a British show. I can't not discuss it until you see it a day, 2 days, 2 weeks later."
Mm.
And he was saying, "Oh, well, so you're saying spoilers are okay?" I said, "No, I'm not saying spoilers are okay. I'm saying... You need to be able to avoid them. Unfortunately, because of the volume of information on social media, it's impossible to go on there and not see spoilers unless you're actively muting hashtags or avoiding specific sites that you think will discuss it.
Mm.
For example, if I didn't want to know about what had happened in Sherlock, I would not go on Tumblr until I'd seen the episode. Or Supernatural, for example, because apparently Tumblr is fueled by kittens and Supernatural.
Yes.
It's a very, very tricky thing. I think TV spoilers probably avoid for a day or two, I think. I think that's reasonable. Movies, maybe a week or so. Mm. Books, because, again, things like The Wheel of Time. I think there's a statute of limitations at which point you can say, look, this isn't a spoiler. You've had a reasonable amount of time to get up to speed with this.
Yeah.
There's some things where I would feel like it was spoiling. Like, if a kid was just reading Harry Potter and someone told them the end.
Yeah, I think there's an age thing
as well. Yeah, but that's deliberately being a dick about spoilers.
Yeah.
If, say, you and I are discussing issue 2 of Secret Avengers, which has been out for a couple of weeks now, and someone says, oh, that's a spoiler, I only get to my comic store once a month. It's like, well, actually, no, I don't feel it is. I'm not going to have to avoid discussing things on the off chance that it doesn't fit in with your lifestyle. That's where I think the spoiler thing gets a bit of cloudier. It's, I think discussing comics, like, the week or 2 weeks after they come out is fairly reasonable.
I mean, I don't know, in terms of TV shows that you watch, Hazel, my biggest problem is with some shows that are obviously American, Sky Atlantic are getting better, where, I mean, they put Game of Thrones out as a simulcast at like 2 o'clock in the morning, which, you know, if you've got a job, is pretty much impossible to stay up and watch. But it goes out, a TV show goes out within 24 hours, but then things like Mad Men, they're putting that out like 3-4 days later. And in with regards to like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which we're talking about a bit earlier, Channel 4 are putting that, they're about, what, a month or two behind?
I was going to say, that's really out. I mean, I just assume that we're between a few weeks and an entire season behind the US.
What, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, anything really. I mean, because the last thing I really followed was CSI, and we were always miles behind.
It depends on who's showing it over here.
Yeah.
If it's a terrestrial channel, like the BBC, ITV, or Channel 4, or Channel 5, normally we are significantly behind the US. Sky TV, when they buy the rights to things, they spend a lot of money on it because they want to be able to show it first. Case in point being Game of Thrones that we get the next day. Mad Men, I think we get 2 days later.
3 days. It's a Wednesday.
Sorry, 3 days later.
Which is a long time.
Yeah.
But compared to terrestrial television, where they'll wait for a whole season to go out because they want to make sure it's A, not cancelled, and B, there's no production gaps, which obviously is what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has suffered from.
Oh, God. I mean, the gaps.
I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started last summer?
Is it one season?
No, it was October. Yeah, it's still season one. They've just had a couple of breaks. This comes back to another thing we've previously discussed on the Three Bods podcast, that I'm very much of the opinion that TV series in a season shouldn't have more than 13 episodes.
And this is where the US and the UK are very, very different.
The vast majority of UK drama serials are 6 episodes.
Yeah.
Maybe 8 at a push.
Mm.
With a lot of the US shows, the ones that I find I tend to enjoy the most, like Archer, Community, Mad Men, Walking Dead,
Game of Thrones.
They're very rarely more than 13 episodes in a season.
Well, Community never used to be, did it? Community used to be 24, and I think because it had its budget slashed.
But it was a better show for it.
Absolutely.
I often believe that the longer a season, the greater the chance that there is by necessity gaps because of production.
Yeah,
and also padding. Either whole episodes of filler or lots of filler in lots of episodes.
Or even,
I think having shorter seasons forces you to keep your plot in tighter.
Yeah. Or even full seasons like Lost. There was just complete padding seasons.
Oh, I will not have a bad word said against Lost. That was an awesome show.
Oh, fuck off. Series 3. You're gonna justify season 3 to me.
Hang on, which one was season 3?
Exactly. That's exactly my point, Dan.
I marathon it. I can't remember what happens in what season. Is that the one? Hang on. Massive spoiler. Is season 3 the one where Charlie dies at the end?
I think that might be four.
Okay.
But three, I think three was one where Jeff Loeb got involved. Don't we need to say any more?
Blimes. Moment of silence there.
Yeah.
But yeah. So
I had a hangover so bad a few weeks ago, I felt it was important to punish myself by reading Jeff Loeb comics.
What did you read?
The one where Cable goes berserk and tries to kill everyone.
That narrows it
down.
Yeah,
I'll just say that's just an entire decade, isn't
Cable,
it?
Cable, why are you doing this? Future! The future's going to be bad!
Yeah, that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Damn it, Cable, if you can't use time travel responsibly, you shan't be allowed to have it. You've ruined it for everyone.
Have Jeff Loeb and Rob Liefeld ever done a book together?
I would like to say here, no, they haven't, to the best of my knowledge. I would like to say I do like a lot of Jeff Loeb's older work. He did write my favourite ever Batman story, The Long Halloween.
How did he do that? I don't know, how did he produce that? And, I mean, and Dark Victory's not bad, but...
He also did Spider-Man Blue, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
He did Daredevil Yellow, which is also extremely good. He did Hulk Grey, again, very good.
Does he just need a colour scheme?
Well, as I was about to say, again on this line,
Hawkeye
there's
Purple?
A rumour he and Tim Sale will eventually do their Captain America Red, White and Blue book.
Okay.
Learn the colours with Jeff Loeb.
But he also did Ultimates 3,
Hawkeye,
so,
Purple.
You know.
Yeah, I think I like Jeff's earlier work. I think understandably his life did change after the very tragic death of his son. And his output changed as a result. I still think he's an immense creative force. I still think he does a lot of very imaginative, just idea crammed stuff. His Hulk book about the Red Hulk with Ed McGuinness wasn't to my tastes, but you can't deny that he crammed in a whole bunch of like new concepts and ideas, and every issue was just full of fight scenes, splash pages, exposition, everything ploughed along at a really, really good pace. And I think that's a sign of a good writer. Irrespective of the fact that I didn't like the overall plot and direction, the volume of stuff he got into the issues was early Lee quality in terms of the way it was going. And there was every issue there was something new happening.
Do either of you guys kind of watch the... I know you probably watch maybe more the DC cartoons, maybe you watch like the Marvel cartoons at all?
Not in the last few years.
So, like, Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers Assemble?
I haven't been watching Avengers Assemble, but I do watch Ultimate Spider-Man.
Okay, what do you think of it?
I think it's great.
Have you seen Spectacular Spider-Man?
No.
Okay. Jeff Loeb is basically... When Disney took over the whole Marvel thing, they closed down two cartoons, which was Spectacular Spider-Man and Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Which was amazing.
Which is great.
Fantastic, yeah. And I've watched some of Ultimate Spider-Man, and it just feels like, and apparently Jeff Loeb said this, that cartoons are for kids. And I think, surely when you look at the likes of Bruce Timm and everyone else at DC, it's like, cartoons aren't for kids, cartoons are for everybody. And Ultimate Spider-Man just doesn't feel as, compared to Spectacular Spider-Man, it's nowhere near as good. If you haven't seen it, there's two seasons, and it's absolutely fantastic, and probably has one of the best theme tunes I've heard in a long time.
I do quite like the new metal Spider-Man song, the Ultimate Spider-Man.
Fair enough.
It's like, you know it's going to be teen angst.
I thought my experience watching the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon was so many Family Guy-esque non sequiturs and odd fourth wall breaking moments. I went, this is a terrible Spider-Man cartoon, but if you put him in red and black, it would be an amazing Deadpool cartoon.
Yes. Yeah, I could see that.
It for me, it was very Deadpool's thing. I've not watched Avengers Assemble yet, because I really enjoyed Earth's Mightiest Heroes, the last Avengers cartoon.
Fantastic.
And when they canned that and said, oh yeah, we're going to have this new one called Avengers Assemble, there was a massive uproar, and everyone said, you've just done three seasons of arguably the best TV representation of the Marvel Universe as a whole, ever. Why are you doing away with it? And then they sort of... The impression I got was that they hastily backtracked and said, oh, well, no, we're not ignoring that. that will have still happened, but we pick up some time later with some different team members, but that's all still in continuity. I've not seen Assemble, so I don't know if that's the case. I'm waiting until the season finishes and comes up on Netflix, and then I'll marathon it.
I mean, what I loved about Earth Mightiest Heroes, it actually made me go away and I would come across people and I'm like, I've never heard of this character before, and it would go and make me like wiki them, and I'd be like, oh bloody hell, and it'd be some really obscure character. They really did delve into the tomes of the Marvel universe to bring in characters. It was I love the one where they had to call up the Avenger Reserves, which was like the Thing, Spider-Man, I think Wolverine, I think there was a couple of others as well. So they really...
Yeah, that was a shout-out to Bendis' New Avengers, though, wasn't it? Because you had Power Man and Iron Fist showed up.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes.
That was on... Actually, on I can beat that for a TV obscure shout-out.
Go on.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the most recent episode shown in the United States, Season 1, Episode 18, Providence, has Agent Garrett, Bill Paxton's character, is talking about someone he previously arrested and locked up and put in S.H.I.E.L.D.'s lockup. And he said, oh, the last time I was here, I was bringing in Johnny Horton. Oh, he was crazy. He had lion claws for hands. And I thought, that's a really weird thing to throw into the TV show. I'm going to Google this. So I Googled Marvel Johnny Horton.
Wait, you didn't know who this character was?
Yeah, it's a proper obscure villain. It's the Griffin.
Wow, if you didn't get it, then it must be obscure. That's all I'm going to say.
I knew that was the Griffin.
Wow.
You know Johnny Horton's the Griffin. How do you know that?
He's in, like... Isn't he one of... you know, around Siege, when... What's his...
Yeah, he's the dad of one of the secret warriors.
Hounding around. Yeah, the Griffin, like, beats up Spider-Man or something.
Isn't he Yo-Yo's dad? From Secret Warriors. As well,
yes,
yeah, but I knew the character, the Griffin, but I didn't know what his actual name was. So seeing that little reference in Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. had me going, "This is quite cool. This is very good."
Yeah, it's not. I still don't think it's as cool as Sitwell's little reference to Stephen Strange, though, in Captain America.
Oh no, that was epic.
Yeah, I think I may have jumped about 2 inches in my chair when he did that and gone squee. It's like in the cinema. Kia had to kind of like just hold me down and stop me from just like almost doing the running man on the spot. I think I was that happy. But I mean,
if there's any Hollywood producers listening now, if you're looking at making a Doctor Strange movie,
you say Johnny
I'm
Depp
just
going to
say that there are two actors I would consider suitable for this role.
Do not say Johnny Depp.
Hugh Laurie. Because House as grumpy Doctor Strange, the womanizer from Matt Fraction's Defenders run would be amazing. And the other one is Timothy Oliphant from Justified.
Really?
Yes. I think he could do it, and I think he'd be really good.
See, I think it has to be Javier Bardem.
Give him a bit of like a bit of a Mediterranean feel.
Mm.
Really?
Is that a case if you want it to be Javier Bardem, Hazel?
The truth.
With a nice big open neck, sort of like, you know...
The Eye of Agamotto is a medallion.
Yes, yes. A big, big rug of hair.
You can carry off that cape.
I will show you dimensions you would not believe. Why did he suddenly go French there? It's my Batroc accent coming through again.
How long has it been that you've gone since seeing The Winter Soldier without doing a Batroc accent?
What's the longest period?
Yeah.
Probably minutes? Between our last podcast and this one.
Yeah.
No... I've seen you do the Batroc accent.
Did I do it in the pub the other night?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, and when we were playing the Game of Thrones game.
So, oh, that sounds interesting. Is that any good?
Yes.
Yes.
It's very
do
good.
Do you just get to kill
not
everybody?
Not trading stuff, though, I don't think. It's all very combat-based.
It's best played with a full complement of 6 people.
Okay.
And there's a lot of... once you get going, there's a lot of diplomacy involved in terms of making deals. One of the breaking it down for you, it's not dice-based like a lot of board games are. It's more to do with marshalling enough force to be able to take over areas on the board. Where the diplomacy comes in is, I can say, right, fair enough, this army is going to move from here into King's Landing to attack Duke. I can say to Hazel, would you like to support this? She can put down a support order for her army in a neighbouring province. But when it comes to the battles, she can say, actually, I'm throwing my lot in with Duke. I'm supporting his defence.
Treachery.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yes. It's there's a little bit more to it, but you know, it's a good fun game. But it's definitely best played with a full complement of six, and I would imagine you do need a good few hours to get through a game.
Is that when you guys were organising with Kieran?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That did sound quite cool. So going back to sort of Captain America.
Sorry.
No. Tangent away. Hazel, I know you've seen it twice. Have you seen it any more than that? I know you've seen it once, Dapper. Have you seen it any more? Or?
I have seen it twice, once in 3D, once in 2D.
Okay. Difference between the two, anything?
Much clearer in 2D. The 3D makes it very murky, particularly the sequence at the beginning on the ship.
Yeah. So anything else that you kind of take from it? I know we've broken it down on our Three Bods podcast, but is there anything else you've kind of taken away of what you could see the future being? Or
yes, I think Avengers 2 is... Can I freely discuss spoilers for Cap 2 at this point?
Yeah.
Avengers 2 is going to see the Avengers more similar to the traditional comic version, where they are bankrolled by Stark. They are no longer going to be S.H.I.E.L.D.'s super team. They are going to be their own thing.
Yep.
I really liked the fact that the film, to me, actually felt more like a Secret Avengers film than a Captain America film. I liked the fact there were so many... I didn't like the fact there were so many characters. I liked the fact that there were no extraneous characters and they all got their moment to shine.
Apart from the Winter
Soldier. I thought Falcon was very good. I thought Black Widow was excellent.
He got his moment to shine.
Well, the Winter Soldier?
Yeah. He got to rip a steering wheel out of car. But and then, like,
he was
punch everyone on a freeway.
I just thought he was underdeveloped. I just don't think he got...
He was. He didn't need to be in the film. That could have... His role could have been played by Crossbones. And then at the end had him revealed to be the guy from Cap's team. That would have worked just as well. But
no.
the reason he was in it is to set up Bucky being the big plot for the next film. I mean, for God's sake, he's just like four words in this film.
Yeah,
who the hell
but
is
he
Bucky?
Says...
Yeah, who the hell is Bucky?
Actions.
Steve? Who's Steve? What year is this? Who's the president?
I know him, don't I? Yeah, that's about it.
I don't think the Winter Soldier was at all extraneous. I think the whole... I mean, a lot of the film was about Cap reconciling to the modern world. And the Winter Soldier is a really substantial emotional beat to that.
I don't necessarily think the role that he had in the film was extraneous, because you did need a physical presence for the bad guys in the fight sequences and being a boogeyman. What I did think was... unnecessary was it being Bucky and the Winter Soldier.
Really?
I think the film would be exactly the same, if not better, if it didn't have that Bucky touch point. I really want to
so
see...
wrong.
No, let me finish. I really want to see the whole thing with Steve trying to get Bucky back and trying to help rescue him from his own mind and all that. I really want to see that. But I felt that was unnecessary to the main plot of this film.
I don't think it was at all. I think the whole idea of good people being manipulated into doing awful things and the questioning of authority, the parallels between the way Fury treats Cap and the way that Anthony Pierce treats the Winter Soldier.
He offered him milk? Come on, when does Fury ever offer
the world's smallest amount of milk?
Yeah, why did he appear to be drinking milk out of a urine sample glass? What was that up about?
Well, he's a bad guy. Yeah.
Would you like some milk? It tastes of wee. That's weird.
It is the only time he offers Bucky anything in the film.
Mm. Do you think, though, this was...
Hang on, he offers him free mind wipes whenever he wants
them. Yeah.
I'm not sure that's quite the same.
Didn't you know? And Brubaker's there to to assist in helping wipe his mind.
That was very cool.
Yeah,
that was far better than the Stan Lee cameo.
Yeah, that isn't Stan Lee's best cameo. But just sort of a final bit on this: do you guys think that this was pretty much just a setup for Captain America 3/Avengers 3? Where I think personally, we're going to see the death of Captain America /the Civil War. And Bucky's then going to pick
think
up.
We're going to get Civil War.
I think if they do Civil War, it'll be Avengers 3.
I really don't think we're going to get Civil War. I don't know why people think Civil War is happening.
I think it's because I think it would be different. Yeah, well, it'd be different because all the films so far have always been there's a big bad, and they've obviously the Avengers had that very typical thing, and we're going to see it with Batman Superman. There's going to be an element of distrust. They're going to fight each other, and yeah, then they're going to get on, and then they're going to hug it out as bros, and then go and defeat the enemy. I just think actually seeing people very much like we've seen with Steve Rogers in this one of, look, this isn't freedom, this is fear. You're not doing, you know, this isn't the America that I'm Captain Ideal America, not Captain America, of, you know, white picket fences and, you know, everything, yeah, the American dream.
I don't necessarily think we're going to go down the Civil War route.
This is as close as we're going to get to Civil War.
Mm. I think up to a point there was a feeling when you finished when I finished watching Winter Soldier that there was very much like, join us in 2 years when Cap and Falcon rescue Bucky from himself in Captain America 3.
Very much so.
But that felt like a natural epilogue-y feeling to the end of the film saying come back for more, whereas the first Captain America film was nothing but set up for Avengers so that you knew who Cap was in Avengers.
Interestingly, I think both Captain America films have ended on a weird note. Well, most other films seem...
Yeah, that song and dance routine was off.
No! Very much. Where are all the other Marvel films? Pretty much, they are a complete standalone film. It does feel like Captain America at the end, when he wakes up and he breaks out into New York, it ends on him just going, but I was meant to go for a dance. And then it just ends, and it's then, obviously, then the trailer for the event... Well, Captain America was pretty much a trailer for the Avengers. Then we've got the Avengers, and then with Captain America 2, it ends again on, are we going to get him? Yeah, let's go get him. It felt very much like Empire. It had that kind of, well, this is where we are at the moment. We then need the final piece to go, and everything's going to be redeemed. And
It is Empire Strikes Back, because the Rebellion, S.H.I.E.L.D., has been scattered to the four winds.
And someone ends up hanging by their arm on a collapsing, whatchamacallit.
Yeah. Shit, Captain America the Winter Soldier is Empire Strikes Back. You heard it here first.
I don't even like Empire.
But yeah, I guess the only thing I think would stop me from thinking a Civil War film is going to happen is the amount of fans which aren't going to like the idea of Tony Stark not being like a cocky git, but actually just being an outright cock and going...
See, I think they're lining up for a magical bullshit one. I don't think they're going for Civil War.
You mean like all cosmic stuff with the Guardians?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Infinity Gauntlet.
I'm thinking more Celestials than Civil War.
Okay.
I'm going Infinity Gauntlet.
Because they've got Stephen Strange, they've got the Scarlet Witch. They've got the Scarlet Witch, who isn't even around during Civil War. And neither is the Vision.
We don't know what her powers are going to be in this, though. I don't think she's going to have her...
Broken doll powers.
Reality powers. I think she's going to have telekinesis.
I think she's going to have gaze off into the distance powers.
I'm
whilst hugging herself and talking about the future.
About her.
moving away from the Avengers and into other Marvel properties, because Marvel are just bloody everywhere at the moment. Amazing Spider-Man 2 has just opened up in the UK. I think we've got this one a couple of days before the US as well. I'm hearing okay-ish things. I'm hearing it's better than the first one. But again, there's a lot that happens, and again, it's just we need to cram all of Spidey's 50-year history into 2.5 hours.
Well, it's not even all of his history, is it? Because it's Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, but more of a case of how many villains can they fit in, and you know, they never meant for the Green Goblin to be revealed prior to the film. Apparently, there was a marketing fuck up. And somehow the Green Goblin ended up on a poster and that got leaked and they couldn't do anything about it.
So they just accidentally posted their nudes to Twitter, effectively.
Basically, yeah, they did an Anthony Weiner. Yeah, they put their cock up on Twitter and then tried to hide it. Or they put... Oh, or to be,
with the Green Goblin
or to be face. Or to be very, very British, they tried to do, they did an Ed Balls. But...
Someone had to explain that to me the other day because I didn't know what it was about.
Is that because you were playing Cards Against Humanity?
No, I was just like, why do people keep saying Ed Balls on Twitter?
Yeah, because obviously there's a British version of Cards Against Humanity. One of the cards you can answer with is Ed Balls.
Brilliant. I need
Ed Balls is a real politician.
Yeah, somehow. I mean, are you guys going to go see it this weekend?
I'm hoping to see it at some point over the weekend, yes.
I think I'm waiting for the Blu-ray on this.
Oh, okay.
I think I might go and see Winter Soldier again, but I think I'm going to wait for the Blu-ray on this.
Wow, that says a lot. And you also this whole thing that's going around about how the X-Men are in the post-credit sequence, which is the biggest clickbait bullshit I've seen on the internet for a while. It's basically the trailer for Days of Future Past.
Do you want to know what the two credit sequences are at the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2? These aren't spoilers for the film, but I can tell you what happens at the end.
Go on then.
One is a young photographer called Eddie Brock being recruited at the Daily Bugle.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Because that ended so well last time. And the other sequence is one that we've already seen in the trailer, which is the corridor with the Doc Ock tentacles and the vulture wings in the glass cases, with the tall man in the hat and coat, who we previously saw at the end of the first movie, talking to the lizard. We see him again here. He walks past those two items, goes into a third room where there is something in, which is a spoiler, which I'm not going to discuss. Further cementing the premise or the belief that we're going to get a Spider-Man versus the Sinister Six movie.
I thought that was this
one. No.
No, this is Spider-Man versus Electro and Rhino and possibly the Green Goblin, because they now told us that it is the Green Goblin.
What is the fascination with Venom?
I do not know.
Long tongue.
Wow, Hazel.
Well, that went dark.
So is Venom in this film?
No, well, no, there's obviously...
I always think Venom is really dorky looking.
I just think it's... I mean, have you guys seen the little...
It's very 90s.
I can't say any more without giving away spoilers for the film.
Well, I've seen different things online about where they're potentially going with this. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is the fact that they decided to put an X-Men trailer. Fox have paid Sony basically a fuck ton of money to put the Days of Future Past trailer at the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2. And
is it that new trailer that came out a couple of days ago where hipster Quicksilver is awesome?
I still haven't seen that yet. I should. I know.
I knew this
brilliant.
Was going to be
hipster
the best Quicksilver.
Quicksilver is suddenly good Quicksilver.
Yeah, ye of little faith. See, I told you that would be the good one.
Yeah, see, I know that we posted this on Need to Consume, but I haven't actually got around to looking at it yet.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I haven't actually watched it, but I saw the GIFs.
Well, let me guess, on Tumblr?
Yeah. I don't actually consume any media at all, just GIFs.
Just GIFs, yeah. Life is better in GIFs.
They're like the Cliff Notes versions of films. You get all of the funny bits and like Puny God and all that, but you now have to sit through 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very efficient.
It's not. I was being sarcastic.
Is there anything sort of relevant comic book wise at the moment? Anything which is?
I was quite surprised, really. I'm a big Marvel fan at the moment. I'm finding a lot of their books extremely enjoyable, extremely well put together. But I was very disappointed last week.
Dapper, don't be dapper. Tell everyone what you're dressed as like at the moment.
I'm not dressed as anyone, it appears to have influenced my outfit a little.
And that would be?
I might be a little bit Hawkeye influenced. I'd like to clarify, this is the David Aja casual Hawkeye. I'm not actually sat here in like a purple Wolverine-style mask with a quiver on my back or anything weird like that.
Well, you're not naked with Hawkeye's face over your junk.
Hazel, stop thinking about that.
Oh, I was thinking about it, okay.
You can stop thinking about it as well. Yes, so I'm a bit of a big Marvel fan, and there were two issue ones that came out last week that I've been really looking forward to. Maybe my expectations were too high, but I was a bit disappointed with both of them, but for very different reasons. We got the new Nightcrawler issue one, and we got Iron Fist, the Living Weapon issue one. Now, Nightcrawler I was really looking forward to because he's my favourite X-Man, and the fact that they've recently brought him back from the dead... Fantastic, great move. This is his new series. It's written by longtime X-Men writer Chris Claremont, who's come back to the X franchise after many years away. And it's got art by Todd Nork, who you will have most recently seen on Invincible Universe for Image, and previously has done issues in Amazing Spider-Man, had a very long run with Peter David on DC's Young Justice book. The art's great, it's really good stuff. My main problem with it is there's some awful, typically clunky Claremont dialogue.
of just pointless exposition of, oh my god, this man's firing at me with some kind of sonic pulse cannon. No one says that in a fight sequence.
What? I haven't actually read this yet. I picked it up. But
give it a read. It's a good
I'm
book.
One of the just, three X-Men fans who doesn't care about Kurt.
Oh dear.
I didn't mean to hurt
oh
you.
Oh dear. I felt tension. I can cut that with a knife. And I'm 50 miles away from you on Skype and I could sense the...
I'm okay. You're dead to me, well, anyway, I know everyone's got their favourite. You like Gambit, though, so your taste is suspect. Anyway, my main problem with this is if you picked up this book and hadn't read the first five issues of Amazing X-Men, where they bring Nightcrawler back from the dead, you've got no clue what's going on.
And Amazing X-Men was really fun. Why didn't they just carry on that?
I don't know. This is my point. This is very much issue 5.1 of Amazing X-Men. If you've not read those five issues, this issue one makes no sense to you. It's not a very good issue one. It would be an all right issue if it was part of the ongoing. But in and of itself, and here's the other thing: he's been dead for, I think in the books he's been dead for somewhere between 6 to 12 months.
Is that cool?
I think so, give or take. He's come back from the dead.
Man, those kids graduated fast.
He's come back from the dead. He starts off, and he's in the danger room, and he's fighting with Wolverine. He's doing all this other stuff, and he's mooching around the Jean Grey school, and he's talking to all of his friends. And there's some good sequences. There's a nice bit where he reconnects with Rachel Summers, who he was teammates with for donkey's years. And then eventually he says, oh, I'm just going to go off and see my girlfriend, who thinks I've been dead for the past year, who I've not got round to contacting yet.
That's a big error, isn't it, really, just off the bat?
Yeah, but he turns up and she goes, oh my god, you're alive! And he's like, yes, I'll not tell you that I've been back for about a fortnight or so, or, you know, I've been dicking around at home before calling you, because I don't want you thinking I'm a massive tool.
Who's Nightcrawler's girlfriend?
Amanda
Seyfried. It's not his creepy sister.
Well, she's not his sister.
Oh. I thought they would have taken this opportunity to kind of unfuck that.
No, well, it's Amanda Sefton, the magic user.
His not sister.
Yeah, adopted sister.
That makes it
okay. Oh, yeah, that's perfectly fine. Yeah.
They're not blood relatives.
Oh, okay. Wow. Mm. Wow.
What?
Nothing. That says a lot about you. That's just, I guess, I'm not judging you. Secretly judging you.
They're not.
Okay.
Damn. Yeah, so furiously be scribbling Thorky fanfic as well.
Well, leave a fanfic for you, dear. The whole issue is, it feels poorly thought out as an issue one, as an introduction to the character, and as an incentive to come back for issue two. And it's a shame because I really like the art. His style really suits Nightcrawler. It suits the Jean Grey school. But Claremont's dialogue really kind of lets it down, and the plotting. Mm.
I kind of feel like Claremont needs to be put out to pasture. Like, just only brought back for very special books occasionally, and given 6 pages.
Put him out like a horse stud.
Oh, yeah. God, that's a horrible thing.
Yeah, he's earned it. He can just go to, like, some special X-Men writers' pasture and just not publish much.
The other book from last week, which I raged about and threw across the room when I'd finished reading, was Iron Fist issue one. Iron Fist,
I fucking hated
weapon.
This.
This is the most disappointed and or angry I've been with a Marvel book since Phantom X Max.
Okay, so who's writing Iron Fist now?
Kari Andrews.
Okay, so I know Fraction obviously did a good run on this a while ago.
Fraction and Brubaker did the Immortal Iron Fist, which is in the process of being collected by Marvel in two big softcover volumes.
Lovely.
Which I really recommend. If you've not read Matt Fraction's Immortal Iron Fist, go pick it up. You can get it, I think, the first 13 or 14 issues in one volume now, and it's fantastic stuff.
And Iron Fist is also in Mighty Avengers at the moment.
Yes. Yes, he is.
Having a lovely time.
Being all irony. This book is not Iron Fist. I think if you like the Iron Fist character, I think if you've read him for 20 years, or whether you've only read him in Fraction and Brubaker's Immortal Iron Fist, you will not recognise the character in this book. He is nihilistic. He is just the most awful person. He picks a woman up in a bar, takes her home, and then there's a recurring gag in the book that he can't remember her name.
Do she?
Yeah. Just
also, just not Danny. Like,
they're
Danny's
not the character
whole shtick is that he's got so much, like, goodness in his heart and fire and whatever that he can fucking punch through walls with it. That's his thing.
He is pure of spirit. And also insanely in love with someone he can't be with. He's not going to be picking up people in bars and having anonymous sex with them.
That's not his character.
Probably would, because I think he does that in Defenders. But he wouldn't... There's that awful bit where he's brushing his teeth and then the girl's on top of him and he has exactly the same expression in, like, three panels.
Oh, yes.
And it's just like, oh, look at his cold, dead man angst.
And we also get a retcon of his origin again.
I love man angst.
Manxed.
Yes. And it's just... I'm so mad.
There's so much wrong with it.
I
the
wanted a good
well
Iron Fist book. This, and again, this is the first thing to really, really disappoint me since Phantom X.
What's the writer's sort of form like? Previous sort of books? Have they come from a good book, or have they always been a little bit of an iffy writer? Or because I don't.
He pops up for projects here and there. He's more frequently known as an artist. He did a very, very pretty looking book back in the early noughties called Revenge of the Spider Clan.
Right.
As part of Marvel's short-lived manga line, where he did a Japanese culture influenced
Spider-Man. Oh, yeah, I remember
Spider-Man.
That. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which was really nice. It looked lovely. But this,
whereas this looks shit.
It's not completely devoid of work. There's a very good sequence in it where it's shot, it's black and white of Danny moving through a sequence of martial arts moves. And you look at that, and it's like David Aja at his best. But the rest of the book is very, very patchy. They do a visual trick.
The bits in the snow were good.
Well, they do a visual trick on, I think, the flashbacks, where they try and make it look like the page has been that it's been printed on has been folded.
Okay.
So there's creases and like what looks like surface detail in the flashback sequences, so you know that it's the flashbacks. But again, the flashback sequence is another retcon of the origin. If this was marketed as an alternate universe Iron Fist or Iron Fist Max, so you could detach it from the previous volume or the current character as it stands, I'd probably be all right with it. I just felt this was too glaring a change from Iron Fist as he is in my mind.
Well, also, I mean, he is in current continuity.
Yes.
Because he's in Mighty Avengers, hanging out with everyone.
Being all happy and, you know, I'm hanging out with my best mate and his wife and his kid and his new super team and everything's A-okay.
But isn't this the problem when you've got multiple books that all overlap? I mean, how many Avengers books are there right now?
Way too many.
It's like...
all of them.
Yeah, I mean... So what happens in the case of... And like,
everyone's become Wolverine.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Wolverine was in God knows how many fucking books at one time. You just can't have a character be in that many books and have a consistency with their writing about them. It's so, like you say, if Danny's, like, in his own book, he's all angsty and, you know, one particular way, but then he's appearing in Mighty Avengers and he's happy. It just kind of shows a lack of direction.
But the editor needs to do his job. Well, if you're editing a team book and one of the characters in your book gets a spin-off, you should then be editing that spin-off book and making sure that they tally up. If not 100%, at least to a degree that you can go, this is still the same character.
Mm. But do you not?
I think the thing is, I don't think this Iron Fist series is in current continuity. God knows when it is. But that makes it feel even more pointless and annoying.
What, like a what-if book almost?
Or just a, like, here's a week in Danny's life where he felt empty and sad.
Sad Danny is sad.
He only had his billions to keep him warm.
No, he hasn't had those for years. He loses them at the end of Immortal Iron Fist.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, there's so much good stuff you could do with Iron Fist.
Is he going to get his own film? Or is he part of the Netflix?
He's one of the Netflix.
He's part of the Netflix. Yeah.
I'm getting a little bit worried about that at the moment with how... I mean, admittedly, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. seems to be getting better, apparently. I'm going to wait for it to finish before I watch it. But it does worry me a little bit.
I'm concerned that they haven't phoned me to play She-Hulk.
To be fair, I'm a bit concerned about it. I think you're more ready to She-Hulk, though. She has the power of rage. Yeah.
But also, I think they've announced... or that they've kind of announced that there's going to be an Agent Carter spin-off show as well.
Yes, I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, which I think...
But like Agent Carter setting up S.H.I.E.L.D.,
yep.
Punching people in the tits.
Yep.
Excellent.
I love...
Yeah, the original title for it is Agent Carter Tit Puncher, but they're not sure if that's going to get past the censors.
I don't know if you guys have seen the one shot with her...
Yes, it was on the Iron Man 3 DVD.
Yeah, and it was awesome. And obviously, Hayley Atwell is just an amazing actress. I love her stuff. I love her in The Black Mirror. She's in the first episode of Series 2, which is fantastic, and she's great as Peggy. So it'd be quite interesting to kind of see like a period piece version of S.H.I.E.L.D., basically, but... Obviously, there's going to be lots of butt slaps and telling her what a good gal she is and her then breaking guys' arms as they do that.
I'm fine with that.
I also hope there's a lot of, like, adventuring and...
Yeah, very much Indiana Jones, almost, that she can go off around the world to find, yeah. But even they could even then start to plant the seeds of... can I mention... Fuck it. Of Hydra infiltrating, even then. They can almost, like, retcon it back in, can't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can say she keeps finding out and they keep mind-wiping her.
Ooh.
And that's why she's fucked up in Cap.
I like that, but I think at the same time it weakens her character. I think a lot of people would be upset that a female character is being treated in that way.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'd like to see an opportunity to bring in characters like the original Howling Commandos and Dominic Fortune. Because I think if you want to... carry on with the Agent Carter vibe of her being very capable and not putting up with the sexism and institutional misogyny, pairing her up with Dominic Fortune, who traditionally is written as being
the worst.
Yeah, he's a lovable dick, but he's very much an unreconstructed sexist man's man. And I think it'd be an opportunity for some good interplay between the two characters for that.
I just want to see Dum Dum Dugan again, because I love Dum Dum Dugan.
You just like big ginger moustaches.
I do, and I love the bowl hat.
Because they have Folesworth in the first Avenger. So Peggy could hang out with Union Jack. And that might mean we get spit.
Union Jack, that would be awesome.
You're just going off now, you're going down the rabbit hole.
This is a little bit of wish list.
Yeah, it is a little bit. I think in terms of moving away from comics, with a couple other sort of things before we wrap up, Dapper, I think you've been playing Borderlands 2 now for ever.
Ever, yes.
And they've finally released their final ever, we promise it's the final ever piece, of DLC, which is what, the 6th, 7th piece?
And the rest. This is now the... If you exclude variant weapons and outfits for your characters, which I don't bother with because that's all nonsense, this is now the 9th bit of DLC for Borderlands 2.
Bloody Nora. And it's almost... It's a year and a half since that game came out.
Yep.
That's actually good fan service, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it's also a good way for them to make money. They sold you a full-price game, then they made you buy... Well, they didn't make you buy, but they encouraged you to buy 9 DLCs. Admittedly, 4 of them are fairly large ones, and 5 of them, including this last one, are shorter, more single quest lines. But they put a lot of work into them to give them their own feel.
Put it this way, it's not like some companies who make a full game, and then they lock out content on the disc, and then they charge you to unlock it once you've got it and claim it's DLC.
Yeah,
this is obviously original content and things, but I'm sure you're going to look forward to playing through that. And Arkham City got some DLC.
That's due in just over a week. And this I'm really looking forward to. This is going to be a new campaign, few missions for the game. Unlike the first DLC, which was mostly challenge maps and combat in locked rooms, this is a whole new quest line and is going to feature the introduction of Mr. Freeze into the Arkham Origins setting.
This is DLC for Arkham City or Arkham Origins?
Sorry, Arkham Origins. Arkham Origins. Mr. Freeze we saw in the Arkham City game. Notably, he was that ludicrously hard boss battle.
That was awesome, that bit.
It wasn't when you played it on insanity mode and you had to hit him 10 times and every time with a different method.
What a stupid idea.
What? But it's called insanity.
Yeah, but why would you do it? Why not just play the game? I don't understand people that do that. Was it for a trophy? Is that why you did it?
It may have been.
You know trophies aren't real, right?
Shut up. But yeah, so we saw Mr. Freeze in Arkham City. And now, in this new DLC pack that's coming out for Arkham Origins, it's going to be set after the events of the game. The game takes place over Christmas. This new DLC takes place on New Year's Eve. And will open with Mr. Freeze breaking into a New Year's celebration. Basically fucking shit up and kidnapping someone. Bruce Wayne then has to leave said celebratory shindig and go and sort stuff out. Really looking forward to this. I really enjoyed Arkham Origins. I know it got a lot of stick from people who felt it wasn't the great leap on from City that City was from Asylum. But overall, as a game, I thought it was good fun. There were some nice touches on it. And, you know, any excuse to spend more time as Batman is always a good thing.
Do you know who's playing Mr. Freeze?
I don't. Why?
It's Maurice LaMarche, a.k.a. The Brain from Pinky and the Brain.
That's amazing!
Which I love. I'm a huge voiceover fan, so anything I see with anyone like Tara Strong or Maurice LaMarche, Billy West, John DiMaggio, anything like that, I just instantly fall in love with, because they're just incredibly talented people who really deserve a break to be in big animated films rather than paying Chris Rock $1 million to be a voice. You know, these guys are... They're grafters, and yeah, his Shatner is absolutely spot on. But yeah, I saw some tweets today saying that I think he's playing Mr. Freeze, which is since I think the best version of Mr. Freeze was the Batman animated series, and
yes.
He recently died. I can't remember his name, but I think he was like a country western singer, and the whole thing I always forget the episode's name, Heart of Ice.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just heartbreaking.
Oh, no, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, funny you mentioned the voiceover acting. One of, for the longest time, we've all associated Mark Hamill with being the Joker.
He is the Joker, that's it. There's no more discussion.
Yeah. However, I would say John DiMaggio's performance as the Joker in the Under the Red Hood animated movie... is as good. He plays an extremely good, scary Joker.
He's not in it for much, though, is he? He's not in it...
He's in it enough.
Yeah. I just struggle with anyone outside of Mark Hamill. I don't know.
You're very much a Joker purist, I'm getting that
right. Yeah, I just think it is just... And it's same as Conroy, you know, and obviously Conroy's back for the Darwin Cook short.
Oh, well, the recent Bruce Timm one.
Oh, sorry, yes, not the Darwin Cook. I'm getting all confused. Yes, the little Bruce Timm short, which was amazing. He had like 3 lines in it at the very end. But and then obviously we've now also got Darwin Cook doing a Batman Beyond short, which is amazing.
Looking forward to that.
Yes, there's a small clip up on Need to Consume at the moment, and it shows you Batman, Bruce Wayne, facing off against... Batman of the Future.
That's going to be so good.
Yes. Yes. Hazel, do you play games much, or...?
No.
You're not much...
No, that's
no,
a lie.
I used to play a lot of games, and then at some point in the last half decade, transitioned to only playing Saints Row.
Oh, you play Saints Row?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. I wouldn't... Yeah, I played 3 recently as part of, like, PS Plus. and I was a little bit uncomfortable about it. I just found it...
Really?
Yeah, I just found it a little... Maybe it was just a little bit too much. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being oversensitive.
But Saints Row is the game where I run an amazing lesbian crime gang. And I was the first Latina female president of the US.
So you played the fourth one then? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I've only played Saints Row 3. Because, as I said, it was free. And there's some good stuff in it, but it does feel like you've really got to unlock all your power-ups before you can finish some of the missions, because it is hard as nails. Because they just...
I just go around punching everyone. I discovered at some point that punching is about as effective as most of the guns.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
She's not wrong.
Yeah. I like some of the stuff. It was quite funny in places, but I think at times it was just a little bit... I don't know. Maybe I'm just being oversensitive to it. I just thought it was a bit much, but... Yeah. Yeah. But anyway. So I think we'll just finish on one final thing, which is obviously very American in news, and it seemed to shock a lot of people. Last weekend, I believe, was WrestleMania?
Yeah, a couple of weekends ago was WrestleMania 30, held in New Orleans. Big, big thing. It's the WWE's pay-per-view of the year. They always schedule their biggest matches, have their biggest guest stars, and set things up for the year ahead. It's very much the payoff and the new beginning for the company, story-wise. One of the modern-day records in the WWE is that The Undertaker is undefeated in matches at WrestleMania. He's wrestled at 21 Manias now.
Yeah.
And year in, year out, defeats all comers. And it's become a thing. It's like, they call it the streak, and no one can break the streak. And every year someone steps up and goes, nope, this is my year. And The Undertaker always beats them, sometimes annihilating them, sometimes by closely winning out. This past WrestleMania, Undertaker faced off against a chap called Brock Lesnar, who is a former football player, has been a wrestler, has also been the UFC heavyweight champion. So this is a guy who knows how to hurt people. I don't think you get to be UFC champion without being exceptionally good at crippling people.
Yeah, I don't think he was a very good UFC fighter, though, by all accounts. He was okay, but he wasn't brilliant. But yeah,
is UFC real fighting as opposed to wrestling?
Yes, that's proper. Yeah, in a cage, and you could get to knock someone the fuck out to win. Basically,
you put each other in headlocks and then punch each other in the dick until one of you falls over. It's sweaty dick punching. It's fine. I've seen UFC. I know how this works. What?
That's a very good take on it, Dan. Yeah, it's that. I'd like to see you say that to a UFC fighter.
Come at me, bro. I wouldn't pick a fight with any of the WWE guys.
No, they're all big, yeah.
And most of them know how to put you in a submission move that can pop your shoulder out. So, indeed. You know, it will still hurt. But yeah, back to the main thing. This WrestleMania this year, The Undertaker was defeated by Brock Lesnar. And this has caused much consternation amongst industry pundits and fans. I think a lot of people were aghast that Taker was booked to drop the streak, with it being like the modern-day legend. And I think a lot of people were surprised it went to Brock Lesnar, who at best he's a guest star in the WWE. Mm. He turns up for the pay-per-views and the odd big match. And I think this has left a lot of people with a kind of a weird taste in their mouth about the whole thing. They're like, well, we understand that if anyone was going to beat him, this guy who's seen as a legitimate fighter makes sense, but if he's just going to disappear from the show again now for 6 to 12 months, is it really worth it? Because a lot of people were suggesting that if Taker was going to drop the streak, it should be to someone who is an up-and-comer, which would really put them over with the crowd and get them some momentum. Mm. But the consistent rumour at the moment is that Taker was the one who said, this is the year, I'll drop the streak, I want it to be to Brock. Apparently Taker's a big MMA fan.
Yeah, he apparently he goes to quite a lot of it and has watched Lesnar fight. And, well, someone told me that apparently him and Lesnar actually have a bit of... There is genuine real beef there between them.
Well, I did wonder about this, whether Taker was originally booked to win or lose this, because the following night on Monday Night Raw, which is shown live, Brock Lesnar had a really big shiner. He had a massive black eye. Now, at no point during that match at Mania does it look like he gets hit in a way that would give him a black eye.
Mm.
Which makes you wonder what happened when he went backstage.
Well, I've heard from somebody else that Taker passed out and was rushed to hospital.
He was.
Oh, okay.
That's not a work. That's apparently true.
Yeah, apparently that did happen. Like, some people have said to me, oh, he wasn't actually meant to lose it, but something happened in the ring. But it's like, well, surely they break the fourth wall at those points. If someone's, like, in danger, they come out of the storyline and...
Depending on the degree of danger.
Okay.
I think if someone gets a bad injury, there are cases where Triple H... There was a match he had in the 90s. I think it was he and Stone Cold versus The Rock and Chris Jericho. And there's a sequence where Triple H lands funny and
his leg goes, isn't it?
No, it's his quad goes and you see the muscle flex out on his thigh. But he finishes the match and he lets Jericho put him in a leg submission move to finish the match.
Fuck.
So, yeah, some of these guys, for all of the, yes, the winners are scripted, some of these guys do some crazy stuff and take some, like, seriously badass injuries.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, I've seen a lot of people, and certain people on Twitter, like Carl Ellison and whatever, are like, seriously, what is it about wrestling? And it's a soap opera.
Yeah, it's a soap opera with fighting. It's basically live-action comics.
Yeah.
No.
What do you mean, no?
We've blown Hazel's mind.
It's not live-action comics, is it? Or else they'd be, like, bouncing across rooftops today.
Well, they wear capes and colourful costumes.
And pants.
Yes, shiny pants.
And I mean British pants.
I hope we're all wearing pants right now.
No, go commando. It's Good Friday. Let it loose. Is that too much information?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, I just thought that was quite interesting to kind of to end the show on, in terms of something scripted. I mean, very much almost like a film of, like, oh my, it's almost like a spoiler or kind of a big thing a la Captain America 2 with Hydra of, oh my God, did you see this? Because it's just a storyline, and it seems to be that they're getting a lot of credit at the moment for, apparently the following night Raw was incredible, and they seem to have turned a corner creative-wise, that they've stopped doing stupid things.
Well, there's a brilliant meme that's doing the rounds on the internet of a chap who's in the audience who, when the bell goes and Taker's lost, and he's standing there, and the look on his face is utter, genuine, heartbroken disbelief.
His eyes are 2 inches...
Like out on stalks.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen that. It's hilarious. Yeah.
I've actually seen him being interviewed. He comes across as a really funny bloke as well. He's like, I can't believe this. I just couldn't believe that Taker lost. All the people interviewing him are going, yeah, but do you know what your face looks like?
It's not as good as the Hail Hydra memes that are going around. They're my favourites at the moment.
Those are particularly funny.
Yes, but anyway, guys, with that, I've hoped you've enjoyed this rather British take on everything from the world of geek. You're more than welcome to pay us a visit. We are needtoconsume.com. And on there, we have a podcast, which you can find on iTunes and Stitcher or just by searching for it. And that is 3 Bods, 1 Pod. We record that 3 weeks out of 4, with this hopefully being one of the 4 weeks now going out on one of us. We have a very structured show talking about the world of comics, games, TV, films. We review things. Hazel talks about Thor's hair. Dapper and I talk about ScarJo and everything else.
I occasionally say Arrow is amazing.
Yeah.
I also talk about ScarJo.
Yes, we do. We're an equal opportunity show. We believe in fairness for everybody, and everyone gets to like whoever they like. So please do come check us out. Thank you to one of us for letting us record for them. We're hoping this becomes a regular feature. Leave us reviews. Let us know what you think. Tell Chris and Martin and everybody at one of us if you want us to stick around. If you don't like us, then that's fair enough. We don't mind. But with that, toodle pip. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Toodaloo.